This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Rebound spills right to Morrissey. Headman pass now for Wheeler. He'll dance through center ice and drop in now for Cycli. Near side for Morrissey. Moving in, shooting. And it's stopped by Crawford. Rebound back in behind the net. They're fighting for it there. Cycli tries the wraparound. Cycli a shot. He scores! Mark Cycli dug it off the back wall. Came out wraparound with a shot. A wrister that beats Crawford. And Winnipeg wins it. 50 seconds into overtime. 4-3 here tonight. Jets win. Jets win. Jets win on back-to-back nights in overtime.
Our good friend Paul Edmonds with the call last night in Chicago. The Winnipeg Jets defeating the Chicago Blackhawks by a 4-3 margin in overtime. It was the Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler show as they carried the Jets on their back last night to the victory. Lauren Brossoit was fantastic in net for the Jets as well. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk, and returning from a well-deserved vacation, our good friend Ezra Ginsberg is back in studio. Gentlemen, a pleasure to see you on this, the 15th day of December.
Did you miss me, Drew?
With all my heart.
Awesome.
Did you miss Ezzy, Dave?
Of course, I always miss Ezzy.
That's what I mean. You guys are tight, you know, tight like thieves. You know?
Yeah.
You
know, it was a great trip, but I mentioned this on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's always weird to not be on the show on a Saturday morning.
But you called the show.
No, I know.
We still don't know why you called the show. It was really a topic of conversation that Dave and I had all week long.
I literally missed you guys. I just couldn't not be a part of it.
You just couldn't not be. So you felt
it's a double negative.
You couldn't not. Yeah, it is a double negative. That's true. But you definitely did call the show. I mean, there was it was an interesting phone call. But we always appreciate hearing from you.
I like talking to people on the phone.
Nobody
talks on the phone anymore.
Yeah, if I see somebody calling me, I'm probably not answering.
Like, I like to talk to my dad on the phone. I like to talk to Naomi on the phone. But aside from that, it seems like if you call someone.
Really? You and your wife talk on the phone?
Yeah.
Hmm. Maybe that's something Laura and I need to explore. We're more just texting.
You guys just
forth.
Don't talk to each other at all.
Well, no, we do, but we're not on the phone. I mean, it's if one of us is calling the other one, it's, you know, there's more of an urgency
like
involved.
Like a diaper
in
needs
thing.
To be changed, or
well, no,
riveting radio.
That would be odd that somebody would be calling me. My wife would be calling me on the phone to come home to change our child's diaper.
Well, you have two kids, so there's a lot of diapers. So maybe she can only handle one diaper.
For the record, only one of my children are in diapers still. Erin is 3. She's no longer wearing diapers.
Well, see, this is good because I have a 7-month-old.
Yeah.
And I have to know when the diapers run out.
Yeah. So you can look forward to that because it is quite a milestone to be when you can remove one of your, when you get one of your children out of diapers and then only have to deal with one out of the two.
So Erin's potty trained now.
Erin is potty trained, okay. And has been for the last number, it's been a year already. I'm not 100% sure. It's probably been close to a year if it hasn't already been a year.
And of course, you've been potty trained for quite some time as well.
Oh, sometimes you have a few accidents here or there. You know, you don't wake up in time. That's just one of those natural phenomena.
Let's move it along. Come on.
Last night, the Jets defeating the Chicago Blackhawks
by
that 4-3 margin. I mean, you know,
that was the best 4 minutes of Illegal Curve Radio, I think, of all time.
Oh, well, we're definitely cutting that as a highlight package.
Mark Scheifele last night, you know, 2 goals and an assist. Blake Wheeler had was dominant for the Jets. What did he end up with last night? 11 shots on goal for Blake Wheeler last night. A number that you don't associate with Blake Wheeler, shots on goal. He's, you know, got the reputation as more of a setup man than a trigger man.
He actually had 8 shot attempts against the Oilers as well, Drew.
He's adding just that other wrinkle to his game. Not that he's not a decent goal scorer, but it's not generally what he's thought of.
And it makes sense, though, if you think about it, because primarily he's thought of as an assist man. So, I mean, if you think that most people see you and think you're passing, it's not a bad idea to get a shot off.
That's right. You know, last night, Lauren Brossoit, Paul Maurice spoke about it in his post-game comments, talking about, you know that as a goalie who's going to be playing on the second half of a back-to-back, you're going to face a lot of shots. And he did. And he was very good for the Winnipeg Jets, especially early on in that contest as the Blackhawks really had the they had the better of the opportunities in the first period. They had the better of the skating in the first period. Brossoit was able to keep the Jets in it until Mark Scheifele struck on the power play with about 5 minutes to go in that first period. And it's just the Jets adding another wrinkle. Scheifele doesn't go to his spot. He goes to more or less the line A spot. Wheeler finds him with another beautiful pass. And Scheifele makes no mistake and deposits a pit behind Corey Crawford, giving the Jets the 1-0 lead.
Yeah, he's up to 20 goals, and he's inching closer and closer to Patrick Laine, Dave. But, you know, I don't know how much time, guys, we have this morning to talk about Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. I tweeted it out this morning. I mean, Scheifele's got 19 points in his last 10 games. 9 goals, 19 points. So he's averaging almost 2 points a game over the last 10 games. You might as well just give Scheifele player of the week right now, as far as I'm concerned.
Again.
But Blake Wheeler's got 15 assists and 16 points in those last 10 games. So he's averaging 1.6 points a game. I mean, what Scheifele and Wheeler are doing right now is really absurd. I mean, these guys are playing like the best players in the league. They're right up there with whoever you want to put out there. Nikita Kucherov, Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, whoever. I mean, both of these guys are top 10 in the league in scoring right now. And night in, night out, I think it started with that first game of the month against the Devils. Mark Scheifele was the Jets' best forward. He scored that incredible goal in overtime where he steals the puck from Nico Hischier. I mean, two overtime game-winning goals in the span of 2 weeks. That alone is incredible. But you look at what he did on the homestand, and obviously, you know, the game against St. Louis was, you know, the aberration there.
I mean, the Jets only lost in their last, right, you know, 10 games.
But against Philadelphia, against Edmonton, against Chicago, I mean, Scheifele and Wheeler are going out there night in, night out, and they're putting up big-time point totals every game. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, Scheifele's goal and you know, Laine gets the goal that ties the game up there. But you expect the Jets to score every time they have a power play. And there weren't a lot of power plays last night. Each team had, what, 2 power plays? Or maybe Chicago had 3 and the Jets had 2. I forget what it
Jets
was.
Jets had 4 and Chicago had 2.
There you go. I mean, there weren't a lot of power plays. And obviously the one, the penalty against Kulikov, Drew, was late there. But just incredible what Scheifele and Wheeler are doing. And we have to mention Matty Perreault. Matty Perreault, Dave, was stuck on one goal for so long. And, you know, he's gone on a nice goal-scoring streak here. And he gets the go-ahead goal there. And then, obviously, you know, Gustavsson ties it up with 7 seconds left. But Matty Perreault and Tyler Myers, to me, have really elevated their games. Because these are two players that were criticized big time the first 10 games of the season. Perreault was stuck on the fourth line. He has really elevated his game on that third line.
Yeah, and you mentioned Tyler Myers. Tyler Myers was a guy who looked like he was playing with no confidence for a lot of the season, and in the last, you know, let's say 10 games, because that's really coinciding with the Jets' success as of late, he's playing like a guy who's got the confidence to make some of those fancier moves, especially in the offensive zone. I mean, Tyler Myers is at his peak, you know, when he does sort of that toe drag, when he comes in at the blue line and he drags it past whoever's coming out to defend him, and he can walk in another 4 or 5 feet to get a good scoring chance away. He had that great, he's tried to set up Brandon Tanev there last night. Mm-hmm. I think that was in the first period. He saw Tanev sort of backdoor all alone in the pass, just missed connecting. But you can see Tyler Myers is playing as a guy who's got that vision right now, where he's playing as a confident hockey player. The entire Jets team right now, 1 through 12 and 1 through 6 on the back end and the two goaltenders, are playing confident hockey. They look like they don't expect to lose. Because, you know, if there was ever an excuse, you know, when they were down 2-1 last night to the Blackhawks, after the Blackhawks scored to make it to give themselves the only lead that they had last night, you could sort of maybe expect that the Jets might have started to fade at that point in time. They hadn't had a great second period up to that point in time when Taves scored with 13 minutes into the second period.
What about the first half of the third period where the Jets were just all dominant over the Hawks? I mean, the Hawks didn't play the previous night. The Jets did.
Yeah.
And I think the Hawks had 2 shots maybe in the first 10 minutes of the third period. And then obviously the second half of that third period, you know, the pushback came.
Yeah.
And, you know, they ended up eventually tying the game. But you're right, Drew. I mean, there was every reason to believe that the Jets were going to wilt there and possibly have that quote-unquote letdown game, mm-hmm. but they managed to find whatever gas was left in the tank and win the game in overtime.
Well, Laine gets that goal sort of off a broken play a little bit where, you know, Little sets him up, and Laine's shot was just, I mean...
Well, and also credit Laine for not taking it too many men, recognizing that
Wheeler...
The
patience the poise that Patrick Laine demonstrates there as the puck is inching its way to him, and he knows he can't touch it until his teammates
off,
get off the ice, and then he is able to wait it out, able to get the puck in deep. You know, Little ends up with it, puts it on Laine's stick, and I mean, Corey Crawford doesn't react until the puck has already passed him, basically, because Laine unleashes one of his howitzers that goaltenders, you know, there's no way to prepare for that. There's no way to practice against that. And then Matthew Perreault coming out of the penalty box. You know, another one. Scheifele hits him in stride, and to your point, Ezzy, about Perreault playing better hockey. He's up to 6 goals now. He beats Crawford, and all of a sudden the Jets, after not really playing that well in the second period, end the second period with a 2-1 lead.
Yeah, and you talk about how well the entire team is playing, Dave, and you got to talk about that fourth line, because the game against the Oilers, Lemieux, Appleton, and Roslovic, I think they were right around 5 minutes in that game, and you know they were, you know, around 7 minutes, 7.5 minutes, but I thought that line was much better, and there were points in that game where you could see that Maurice was completely comfortable putting that fourth line out, and I think they're going to have a really tough decision coming up when Andrew Copp returns, and I know you want to talk about that more next segment, Drew, but mm-hmm. You know, is it Mason Appleton or is it Brendan Lemieux? I think Mason Appleton has to stay with the Jets, guys. I think he's looked really solid, especially the last, you know, 2 or 3 games.
You know, and we'll talk about it next segment. I thought Brendan Lemieux, as he, to your point, though, but, you know, has been playing better hockey. He's been playing within himself, and I think he's been effective on the forecheck since really, you know, he had... I think he learned something. At least right now, it appears as though he learned something from getting suspended in Finland for the hit against the Panthers, and realizing you can't put your team into that kind of peril by sort of being too far over on the edge, Dave.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Drew. I mean, it's definitely, he's not playing over that line, but at the same time, does he bring the same element that a Mason Appleton can? And, you know, you just see with Appleton's... you know, confidence, the way he knows Jack Roslovic, the way he knows Jack Roslovic, where Jack Roslovic's going to be, that they just have that comfort level. And again, we've talked about it, how they played together last year with the Moose. But yeah, no, I guess we'll I don't want to reveal all my answers when we're going to have another segment to talk about it.
So let's do that. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets' forward lines. Andrew Copp is inching his way back to health. What happens when Andrew Copp is healthy? What happens? What were your thoughts on the flip-flopping of Kyle Connor and Nikolaj Ehlers again? You know, do you like that, or do you want to see him go back to what they had before last night's game? Much more to talk about with your Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Lowry, Tanev in front, bouncing puck, Copp scores! Andrew Copp, as this line connects again. Copp has his first of the year. Puck goes low to high, and look at the battle. Tight puck support, little cycle. How good have the Jets been using the wall below the hash marks?
Andrew Copp with one of his 2 goals on the season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, you're listening to TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. We want to get you in on the conversation. Best way to do that is via our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve. Send us your tweets. If we like them, we might even read them on air. How's that for a deal for you? And of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio that's available at illegalcurve.com. Moose falling last night, 7-2, Dave?
Oh, yeah.
7-2 to the Toronto Marlies.
Look, the score, final score looks worse than it is because they scored 2 goals 4-on-4, but so it was a 5-2 game, which is still not great.
It's not great.
And then the Marlies just decided, oh, we'll keep skating because it's a 60-minute game, and so they scored 2 more goals towards the end of the game.
There you go. So the Moose will look for their revenge on the Marlies.
Fun game tonight. It's the annual teddy bear toss. So all the teddy bears.
So you're bringing your teddy bear to toss it?
I asked Dan, because I'll be on the broadcast with Daniel again, and I asked him if I was allowed to bring a teddy bear onto the into the broadcast booth and try and launch it. He didn't think that was the safest thing, so none of that. But apparently it's
think
almost...
About the, won't somebody please think of the children?
Yes. So apparently it's
the
almost
sold... The
children
that you hit in the head with, yes, your teddy bear.
Almost sold out tonight. I think they only had about 20 tickets left, so it should be a fun atmosphere when the Moose look for revenge tonight against the Marlies.
There you go. So the teddy bear toss for Dave Minuk on the broadcast that you can hear live on moosehockey.com. Ezra Ginsberg, the Winnipeg Jets' Andrew Kopp, is inching his way back to health as he was out of the lineup with a concussion, came back, and then left the lineup again as he wasn't really up to full speed. We were alluding to it in the previous segment. What do you think happens when Andrew Kopp returns? The Jets will be back to full health. We know they're back to full health on the back end now, as Joe Morrow was activated off the IR in time for last night's game, didn't yep. play. But Sammy Niku was sent back to the Manitoba Moose.
Looked very good, by the way.
Had a goal for the Moose last night.
He had a goal and assist. He actually looked really good. I was just as a quick aside, for those who are curious how he looked in his Moose re-debut, considering he hadn't played in over a month, I thought he was excellent.
He should have dropped the gloves, and then he would have had the Gordie Howe hat trick.
Yeah, he was one play away from just getting... And the way the game...
I think the Moose are okay without Sammy Niku fighting, I got to
yeah,
tell
that's
you.
True.
Yeah. But with Kopp almost getting back to health, we expect it sooner rather than later, let's say. What are the Jets?
Just so you know, Coach Morrison in the pregame audio said he's getting better. He's back skating. He didn't come on the one-off here, but he's doing well. So again, no clear-cut indication that he's how close he is, but.
I wouldn't expect him tomorrow against Tampa, but maybe he goes on the trip to out west where they go next week, where they play in San Jose and Vancouver, and I think they play in Los Angeles as well, starting on, I think that's the Tuesday night game, if I'm not mistaken. Tuesday in Los Angeles, Thursday in San Jose, and then Saturday night in Vancouver as the Jets head west.
The old Pacific Coast Highway trip, Drew.
Except you can't take the Pacific Coast Highway from all those cities, I don't believe, but close.
Yeah, regardless. Let's call it the Pacific Coast Highway trip.
What happens with Andrew Kopp? What happens with the Jets' forward lines? What were your thoughts on Kyle Connor being up with Scheifele and Wheeler last night and Nikolaj Ehlers being reunited with Brian Little and Patrick Laine?
Yeah, it's a great question, Drew, because we talked about it a little bit last segment. You mentioned it, right? You think, okay, well, Mason Appleton's played the least amount of games of those three players, right? Jack Roslovic's been up with the Jets the whole season, and you know Brendan Lemieux obviously was a healthy scratch coming off of that suspension. But you know, I think it's going to be a very difficult decision for the coaching staff and management here. I mean, Nick Petan has to clear waivers, so Nick Petan's not going anywhere. He's in the quote-unquote Marco Dano spot. And obviously, you know, Nick Petan hasn't played in over 2 weeks. And, you know, it's unfortunate for Petan. He can't get into the lineup right now. But I've been really impressed with Mason Appleton. And as far as I'm concerned, you want to see Appleton playing games. And he'd be on the top line of the Moose, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's done enough to earn himself a spot in the NHL. And you know it's just a matter of time before he's going to be a full-time NHLer, whether that's later this year. More likely than not, it's going to be next year or the year after. But you know, Brendan Lemieux, I agree with you, Drew, what you mentioned last segment. I mean, Lemieux's played a lot better. Mm-hmm. And sometimes just staying out of the penalty box in games where he's playing 5 or 6 minutes, you know, is doing something really good. But I think that it's going to be Brendan Lemieux that's sent down, because it's going to be between Lemieux and Appleton. And I think another thing that has to be talked about is you expect Andrew Kopp to go right back to that third line. But I actually think Matty Perreault...
He's playing well on that third line.
Yeah, he's given Paul Maurice something to think about here, because, you know, obviously when you have a line that has worked so well, like the TLC line or Connor, Scheifele, Wheeler, you just expect the coach to never break up that line.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously we saw Kyle Connor move down to the second line to kind of jumpstart Patrick Laine's game. So I think when Kopp comes back, it's not a guarantee that he's going to go back to that third line. I do think that he will eventually reunite with the TLC line. I don't know when that's going to be. But I do think right now, as it stands, if I'm a betting man, I would probably say Brendan Lemieux is the guy that goes back. We should also mention, I don't believe that they have to send someone back as soon as Andrew Kopp is reassigned.
No, because they're playing, they're only trying to, they're trying to have one spot open. They weren't,
right,
they
so
weren't.
They can roll with 14 forwards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can still, I mean, you're allowed to have the scratches. I mean, right. that would be an option.
But
it seems odd that they would do that. They would put another guy who's waiver exempt. I mean, it's not like there's a risk of losing one of Lemieux or Appleton on waivers, that they would just keep him up in the press box, you know, indefinitely, especially when it's easy enough to recall guys back and forth between the Moose and the Jets.
Yeah.
It would be an odd decision, but it certainly is one of the options available to them, Dave. How would you approach it? Which one would you, you know, looking at, you know, Mason Appleton, you know, a guy who would obviously step right back into the Moose lineup and get all the top minutes, the top power play minutes and everything else, or would you rather see him with the Jets and Lemieux back with the Moose, sort of playing in maybe a different role for the Moose than he's used to playing?
Well, I mean, are you saying that as someone who covers the Moose would rather selfishly be able to watch Mason Appleton play with the Moose? No, of course. My suspicion would be that Mason Appleton's going to stay up with the Jets. I think that he's earned that right. I think he's a very smart player. He uses his head. And I think what he does better than Brendan Lemieux is defensive hockey. I think he's a better player in the defensive zone. And again, he's a smart player. He's a little bit more cerebral than most. So I would suspect that a guy like Mason Appleton will stick. Again, I've talked about his chemistry with Jack Roslovic. We know that. And I think just to that idea of a player who's responsible both ends of the ice, and I think that's probably what Coach Maurice is going to ultimately look at and say to himself, which of these two players gives my team a better advantage? Not necessarily in the offensive zone, because we don't need that with the top three lines with the ability to produce. So what is this fourth line going to be able to do? Are they going to be able to hold water defensively? And I think with Mason Appleton, that he gives you a better shot.
And Dave, if you think about all the different characters that we've seen on the fourth line, right? I mean, Matty Perreault was a staple of the fourth line for the majority of the season, mm-hmm. until recently. Christian Vesalainen started the season on the fourth line for the Jets. I mean, there have been a whole bunch of players. Patrick Laine himself even played a little bit on the fourth line. Obviously, that was a very short period of time, right?
Mm-hmm. But an aberration more than anything.
Right. Whether it's Andrew Kopp or Matty Perreault on that fourth line, I really want to see what Jack Roslovic and Mason Appleton can do long-term on that fourth line, because Appleton has not produced offensively. He's still looking for his first NHL goal, but he's only getting 5 minutes or 6 minutes of ice time. So this isn't about, you know, his goal totals and his point totals. It's about developing his game at the NHL level, because he's already developed his game at the American Hockey League level the last 2 years. I mean, we know he's produced at the AHL level. There's not much more he can do at the AHL level, with the exception of maybe putting up bigger totals and going on a playoff run. Right, Dave? And, and obviously, you know, with the Moose, he's going to play those first power play minutes, and, you know, he's going to play on one of the top two lines and all of that. But to Dave's point, and going back to what I said, I think if you're just basing it, if this is, you know, just based on merit, Appleton, I think, has done enough. Those details in his game, I think, are pretty evident, especially, you know, the last, as I mentioned, you know, the last week, week and a half, the last two, three, four games. I think, you know, earlier on, you're kind of seeing a little bit of a hesitant player, and that's to be expected, mm-hmm. you know, his first two NHL games. But I think right now it is a tough decision, because I also think Brendan Lemieux is playing some pretty good hockey in, you know, 5 or 6 minutes a game. So, you know, can Nick Batan get into the lineup? I think it's going to be very tough.
Barring an injury right now, it's not easy.
It's going to be very tough for him to get into the lineup, because, quite frankly, Appleton and Lemieux have fit in better on that fourth line.
And to me, like I said, and I've talked about this a lot, Appleton's just such a hard worker. And he went from a guy who, you know, left college, came to the AHL, just wanted to make the team, started on the fourth line, worked his way up to being the top line, the go-to guy, did what he did last season in the AHL, and now is just working his way up into the NHL. Again, I think a year earlier than I anticipated, I thought he'd get a little bit of a taste of the NHL, maybe similar to what we saw with Jack Roslovic, you know, but I didn't anticipate that he would get quite this opportunity, but I don't think that he's going anywhere at this time.
You have to wonder, if Christian Vesalainen was still here, and if he was still with the Jets or the Moose organization, and the sort of injury bug hit when it did, is Vesalainen getting all of this Mason Appleton time right now that Mason Appleton's getting?
It's a good question, and it's not just Vesalainen. It's Marco Dano, you know, being placed on waivers, and then, you know, he was claimed by the Avalanche, then obviously now he's back with the Moose. But it's, you know, Vesalainen's gone,
mm-hmm.
Dano leaves, so now there's this opportunity with Andrew Kopp out of the lineup. And
the timing worked out very well.
Right, and you know, we'll see what happens here, guys. I mean, we're not privy, you know, to the coaching and management's meetings here. So there is a possibility it's Mason Appleton sent back. But again, just based on the way they've played, I think you'd have to give the edge to Appleton.
Yeah, and I think ultimately what fans have to realize is that it's not the end of the world to go back to the AHL. Like, honestly, like, you saw what Sammy Niku did last night, played all the big minutes, power play, penalty kill, like, every opportunity he was given, he was out on the ice. And again, he looked phenomenal, and he was back to the Sammy Niku confident that fans want to see from a player who's, you know, developing into what they hope to be eventually will be a full-time NHLer. So going to the AHL is not a negative thing. Again, I don't think in this instance that Appleton is going to the AHL, but I'm just saying that it's not necessarily the end of the world.
And whether it's Lemieux or Appleton, I mean, Pascal is going to be happy to get of these two players back.
There's no question about that. Quickly, your thoughts on Connor and Ehlers switching last night, at least for the majority of the contest.
Yeah, well, I'll go first, Drew. I mean, I have no problem with it. And, you know, I didn't really expect it because obviously Ehlers has been great on that first line. But does it really matter who plays on that line? Well, I mean, I prefer to see Connor on the second line with Little and Laine. But
I didn't think that Laine, I mean, Laine scored, but I didn't think Laine, Little, and Ehlers were especially noticeable last night. Whoever's going to play with Scheifele and Wheeler, that's going to be a noticeable line regardless who's playing with them.
I wouldn't be shocked if Paul Maurice goes back to Ehlers, Scheifele, Wheeler on the top line.
I would sort of expect it, but Dave, what are your thoughts?
I think that if I had to guess, I would say Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele prefer to play with Kyle Connor because I think he's an easier player to read. I think Nikolai Ehlers still does some things that make him a little confusing for the structure of that first line. So I think, and I'm, you know, Nikolai Ehlers is a very talented hockey player, but I just think that he sometimes does things that probably are not expected. And I think that Scheifele and Wheeler probably prefer to play with Kyle Connor, a guy whose game
more predictable.
I think more predictable, and a guy whose game probably complements theirs the way a little bit better. But you know, we'll see what happens.
You know, it'll be interesting. I mean, it's again a good problem to have. These are good problems to have when you're 9-1 in your last 10 games and you're the second best team in the entire NHL. And of course, depending on what happens tonight with Toronto, they're into Florida to play the Panthers and the Predators, who I believe have the Devils tonight, if I'm not mistaken. Tomorrow's contest again between the Jets and the Lightning could be a battle of the top two teams in the NHL. When we come back, Mike McIntyre from the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us, talk a little bit more about the Jets, talk about last night's game, talk about everything that's going on with your hometown team. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Last week we were joined by Chase. This week we're joined by Dump. He's Mike McIntyre, a.k.a. Dump, of Dump and Chase of the Winnipeg Free Press. Good morning, Mike, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, good to be here, guys. Thanks.
Mike, obviously, pleased to have you on.
You mean Mr. Dump?
Yeah, sorry, Mr. Dump, but I'll call you Mike for the rest of the interview. How about that?
Show a little respect around.
Yes, my apologies, good sir. Brought you on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets, obviously victorious last night in Chicago, 9-1 in their last 10. You know, is this just the Jets team right now that almost expects to win each and every game they're playing?
Oh, it sure does. And, you know, it's interesting. You look back at that game against St. Louis, the one in that stretch that you just mentioned, the one loss, and it was the game, of course, where they did score against St. Louis, and it almost seems like all that did, guys, is make them really angry, and they've just been scoring goals now in absolute bushels. You know, it's a team that seems like they can almost score at will. And whether they score first in the game or fall behind now, it doesn't seem to matter. And to me, the big difference in their play recently versus, say, earlier in the year, you know, they were still getting the results earlier in the year, but I think everyone would admit that the Jets weren't necessarily playing their best hockey. They were almost getting away with some things. I think now, in this recent stretch, the Jets are playing very good hockey, and, you know, they are obviously getting the results I think they more or less deserve. It's impressive to see. I mean, we're coming off here in Winnipeg. Of course, the Jets had a franchise record points and wins and whatnot last season. Well, they're actually ahead of last year's pace at this point. And some of the numbers, you know, we're not just 10 or 15 or 20 games into the season. We're nearing the halfway point, and you look at some of the paces that players are on, and I'm looking specifically at Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, and Patrick Laine. I mean, they are all on pace for some pretty ridiculous numbers that you just don't see very much anymore, not in 2018 in the NHL, but here we are. This team is an offensive force, and, you know, we saw it again last night. They give up that tying goal with 7 seconds. in years past, that's probably a game the Jets find a way to fritter away a point. And instead, what do? They come out and almost very quickly, almost instantly in overtime end it.
Mike, Matty Perreault had 3 goals in his first 29 games, and he's got 3 goals in his last 3 games, including last night's go-ahead goal against the Hawks. And, you know, Matty Perreault's been a guy who's been bounced around from the fourth line to the third line, back to the fourth line. Now he's obviously on the third line. But how nice is it to see Matty Perreault start to score more goals for a guy who was really struggling early on this season?
Yeah, and that secondary scoring, which seemed to be, again, a bit of an issue earlier in the year, that's really come around now, right? They're getting contributions from a lot of players, including a lot of defensemen now. You know, Bufflin, Morrissey, Tyler Myers, who are chipping in, but even, you know, guys like Nikolai Ehlers, who's now into double digits and certainly started the season very slowly. And Matthew Perreault absolutely is another player who's starting to put the puck in the net. And I think, guys, I mean, yesterday's, I believe, was a 5-on-5 even strength goal, but his 2 before that this week were on the power play. And there's another development for the Jets, right? If you're the opposition and you're looking at the Jets' number one power play overall in the league, maybe you've thought that you've kind of figured out how to try and defend against that number one unit. But now here comes the second power play unit that all of a sudden is pretty hot themselves and are now scoring goals, you know, when they're out on the ice. And, you know, now you've got a real headache on your hands because it's, you know, even if you survive the first minute or minute and change of the first power play unit, well, over the boards comes the second unit, and they are proving to be pretty lethal right now as well. And then throw in the fact that, you know, we saw that goal Mark Scheifele scored last night where he actually changed his spot. You know, it wasn't from his so-called office that he scored it. It's almost in the line A spot. So now they're throwing new twists and new wrinkles in it, and my goodness, it's a handful, that's for sure.
Hey, Mike, what lessons can Winnipeg management and fans learn from their hockey neighbors in the Windy City?
Well, I mean, you know, I wrote a column today that it's really interesting because I remember vividly game 2 of season 1 of Jets 2.0, right? That they had that home opener against Montreal, but they kind of fell flat. And then came the big matchup, I think, their very first road game in Chicago. And I remember that. You know, the Jets raced out to a quick 2-0 lead and then it fell apart and they lost, but only by a goal. And, you know, this was a Jets team that was probably, I think people realized, wasn't going to make a whole lot of noise, and they were taking on the big, bad, mighty Blackhawks. And, you know, I sort of wrote today how quickly things can change because you now look at the state of these two franchises. The Jets are the team that is going places. No, they don't have the cups that the Blackhawks did in 2011, but, you know, the Blackhawks are an absolute mess. I thought they played well last night. Obviously, they played well to beat Pittsburgh, but this Chicago team is in real trouble because, you know, I don't think there's any easy out to the problems that they have. They have an aging core. They have, they're in salary cap hell. And so some of the lessons I think management can look at is what Chicago did with some of its core players, especially, you know, rewarding some loyalty there, but getting themselves into some real trouble. Now, all that being said, I think any team, including the Jets, would gladly trade sort of some future woes to get rewarded in the way the Blackhawks have with 3 Stanley Cups. But, you know, to me, I wrote today that it's not just management that can maybe learn some lessons on how the Blackhawks managed the cap and got themselves into some real financial troubles now, but also fans. Because, you know, you look at the Chicago market, this sort of once proud team, fans are turning on them. They're demanding, you know, you run guys like Taze and Keith and Seabrook out of town. And so my advice to fans in my column today was sort of like, look, enjoy the moment, savor it. Things can change and can change in a hurry. The window looks to be open for these Jets right now and for the foreseeable future. But as the Blackhawks have proven to to management and to fans, things really can change in a hurry. And in a way, guys, all good things must come to an end.
Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets. You can read Mike's work, of course, in the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, Dustin Byfuglien's been putting up the numbers as of late. You know, last night he had an assist. 2 nights ago against Edmonton, he had 2 assists. Against the Blackhawks on Tuesday night, he had 3 assists. Is this the most consistent Dustin Byfuglien that we've seen on both sides of the ice? I mean, he's playing very well in his own zone. Haven't had any really glaring defensive breakdowns that I can think of off the top of my head. And he's contributing on the offensive zone like we're expecting, that we've come to expect from him.
Absolutely. 2 years ago, right, we had the really offensive running gun, high risk, high reward Dustin Byfuglien that, you know, and the Jets, they weren't very good. They paid for those sins, not just Dustin Byfuglien, but a lot of the players dearly. So the plan or the goal was to try and rein him in a little bit, and I think we saw that. We saw a much more defensively responsible, play-it-safe Dustin Byfuglien last season, but his point totals suffered, right? He maybe didn't have the same offensive kind of season, especially early in the year. His numbers started to come around, but, you know, there was a real adjustment period there. I think this year, though, you're seeing the total package. We're seeing that really good, sound, defensive Dustin Byfuglien, but now we're seeing the numbers come, and sure, part of that is the absolutely lethal power play that he's putting up a lot of points, but even 5-on-5, he's been tremendous, and, you know, it really gives the Jets, you've got that Trouba-Morrissey pair, but if you're the opponent, there's really no sense of relief when you get Trouba and Morrissey off the ice, because now you got Dustin Byfuglien and the very solid Ben Sherratt, who seems to have just really acquitted himself nicely on that pair with Dustin Byfuglien, you know, that's there's no relief there. So I think that's been a big part of the Jets' success this year for sure is the overall play of Dustin Byfuglien. And, you know, it's amazing, right? Because here he's another year older, and he's at an age where players usually aren't improving. If anything, you're kind of hoping that they're maybe just treading water. And I think we're seeing a much better version of Dustin Byfuglien than we have even in the last couple seasons, and that's got to be a real great sign for the Jets. I get the sense, guys, you know, he's that one guy, right, that has a cup ring. He may not necessarily show it when he does a rare interview because he hates doing media. He's not great with a quote. But I do get the sense that there's a real drive and determination there on his part. And, you know, there's a reason he's wearing a letter on his sweater. He's a leader. And, you know, in his case, I think more than anything, he leads by example, and he's setting quite the example.
Mike, I think we're all expecting Connor Hellebuyck to get the start tomorrow night against Tampa Bay, and it's going to be a fantastic goaltending battle between two of the best goaltenders in the league, with obviously Andrei Vasilevskiy in net for the Lightning, with 4 games left before the Christmas break and no back-to-backs. Do you think it's possible that we see Hellebuyck for all 4 of these games?
I do, although, I mean, Laurent Brossoit is certainly making a convincing case. What is he now? Like, he has that one loss this year, and it was the absolute chintziest of losses. That's the game where he came in after Hellebuyck had given up 3 goals to the Flames. I think we were all a little surprised to see him take the loss. Yes, he did give up the 4th goal, and the Jets ended up scoring 3. So technically, he gave up the game winner. But I like the pitching, you know, the pitching rule in baseball, where a starting pitcher, no matter when he gets yanked, if he gives up enough runs and his team never gets the lead back, he's on the hook for the loss. So I would have liked to have seen that, because that's the only blemish on Laurent Brossoit's record, right?
Yeah.
He's undefeated other than that one extra time loss he had. I think he's 7-0-1 now as a starter. And I was just glancing at the goaltending stats last night, and he now he's played enough that he's just qualified for some, you know, the overall things. And I think he's like 3rd or 4th in save percentage and 5th in goals against. He's been tremendous. So I do think, given that you then get a bit of the Christmas break, they'd probably like to find a way to get him one more start before Christmas, because if he doesn't, he's now going to sit a long time. before he likely plays again, because even if you look at their schedule coming out of Christmas, they're at home on the 27th, they're at home at the 29th, they're on the road on the 31st, and then they don't play again till the 4th. So, you know, where do you maybe fit him in? I wonder if maybe he'd get either the LA game on Tuesday, or maybe he gets the Vancouver game. I think Connor Hellebuck probably plays against the Sharks, but I would say there's a good chance that we see Lauren Brassard one more time before Christmas. And you know, it's all about trying to manage those minutes of Connor Hellebuck, and why not, when you have a backup goalie that is almost automatic when you put him in. You know, Connor Hellebuck, you want to watch the miles on the odometer, especially as we get into March and April, and certainly the Jets hope May and June. So if you can get Hellebuck a little extra rest here and there and still have a great chance of winning a hockey game, I think it's a no-brainer.
Well, Mike, sticking with the baseball analogies, who are you giving the Cy Young Award to, Patrick Laine at 23-6 or Lauren Brassois at 7-1?
Yeah, they got the double barrel action in the bullpen going there. And then what would Blake Wheeler be? So what's the reverse Cy Young? He's what, 5-38? He's being sent down not even to AAA. He's going like straight to AA or single A with that record. But yeah, I mean, although I'll say this, we've seen, I think, a little more playmaking lately from Patrick Laine, which is another good sign. You know, he doubled his assist in this past week. He went from 3 to 6 and made another really nice play yesterday that didn't lead to a goal, I believe. But, you know, he's certainly showing some good hands that aren't just there for goal scoring. The play I'm thinking of actually is the play he made to actually set up his own goal, where he sort of kept the puck in and did one of those toe drags that we see. So, you know, everybody talks, of course, about the shot, but Patrick Laine has a lot of other skills as well. And I think, you know, his ability to make passes and to get plays going, especially in the offensive end, is a bit underrated. But certainly the fact he's now scored in 2 straight games, a guy that is a notoriously streaky scorer, that's got to be bad news for, you know, these next 4 opponents of the Jets, because he seems to be getting back into that zone again after what I'm sure must have felt like an eternity for him since he scored. For most players, it would just be no big deal. But, you know, here he is now up to 23. I think he's now back on pace for 59 goals this season. That was one of the crazy stats I talked about. And how about this one for size, guys? Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler both tied for 5th in NHL scoring as of this morning. They are both on pace for 110 points, which would just be ridiculous.
Not too shabby.
No, it's crazy. They just keep putting them up.
You know, Mike, with Andrew Kopp close to return, although we don't have an indication as to when that is exactly yet, but with Andrew Kopp close to return, what do you think is going to happen on that fourth line? Do you see Mason Appleton coming off, or do you see Brendan Lemieux being the one who gets the seat up with us in the press box?
I think without a doubt it's Brendan Lemieux that comes out right now and joins Nick Petan and us up in the press box. If the Jets, in fact, decide to keep 2 extra forwards around, don't forget they were running just 22 skaters for quite a while. Part of that was to navigate the salary cap, which they're quite tight against. And so I suppose if they decide they only want to run 22 skaters, there would be a chance that Brendan Lemieux would actually come out of the lineup and go right down to the Manitoba Moose if they're fully healthy. Because I think Nick Petan, he is the Marco Dano of last season. He's that guy that is going to have a really tough time when everybody's healthy getting into the lineup. But the Jets also don't want to potentially lose an asset for nothing by sending him down to the Moose and having him be put on waivers where any of the 30 teams could then claim him. So I think Nick Petan is kind of stuck in purgatory in a way. Brendan Lemieux doesn't need waivers. But yeah, I think Mason Appleton stays. And you'll remember, guys, we only saw it for, what, a game or two, that fourth line when they had Roslovic with Appleton and Perreault. I think Matthew Perreault, Andrew Kopp's very likely going back to his regular spot with Lowry and Tanev, which would knock Perreault down. And I'm sure Coach Paul Maurice and his staff would love to see more of that Pro Rossovic Appleton trio that looks so promising. And the other thing that that might do, I think there's a lot more trust when Matthew Perreault is on that line versus Brandon Lemieux or really anybody. That probably gets that group a few more minutes a game, which certainly gets guys like Rossovic and Appleton on the ice a bit more. But yeah, I think when Andrew Copp's back, it's Brandon Lemieux that's the odd man out.
Mike McIntyre covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, this is probably the last time we're going to speak on the radio, at least, until maybe even close to the new year, but we want to wish you and your family a happy holidays, and thanks so much for joining us all the times that you do here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You bet. Always a great time, guys, and best of the season to all of you as well.
Likewise,
you know,
Mike.
Drew, you know we're going to see Mike at the game tomorrow.
I said on the radio. on the radio. We might not be able to see it. You know, I won't be at the game tomorrow. So, fine. Mike, that happy holidays was only from me. It's not from Dave and Ezzy. They're rude. I'm polite.
You know what? You can wish it to me again tomorrow, and I won't mind.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Tomorrow, Mike.
You're a gentleman. These other two guys are raised in a barn or something. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jets' schedule. They've been loading up on some of the bottom feeders. It'll get a little bit harder starting tomorrow night against the Lightning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
And only for the seventh time this year, the Tampa Bay Lightning have been held to one goal or less, as the Jets will win this one 3-1.
That from last year, right after the All-Star break, if you remember, Michael Hutchinson got the win for the Jets. As he got called up, he went to Utica to play in the AHL All-Star game, traveled the day of, got the win for the Jets against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Louis Domingue in net for the Lightning in that game. I don't think that'll be the goaltending matchup come tomorrow evening.
Different.
Hellebuck against Vasilevsky. Last year, two of the finalists for the Vezina Trophy. They both lost, of course, to Pekka Rinne. It'll be a great game tomorrow evening, potentially one versus two. More likely, depending on what happens with the games tonight, it'll be a battle of two top five teams. The Lightning will definitely be in first, but the Jets can be overtaken by the Leafs and the Predators again. Tomorrow's one of those few regular season games where you can get excited for it, because it's a potential Stanley Cup final. There's no reason to think that the Jets and the Lightning couldn't make the Stanley Cup final. These are two excellent teams who are going to do battle tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place.
This is a battle between the big dogs.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned it. I mean, whether or not, you know, the Jets are officially second in the league or not, it's irrelevant. I mean, you're talking about one of the top teams in the West versus one of the top teams in the East, and I could definitely see this being a cup final. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the schedule, and it seems like every year, guys, we're talking about the schedule. And sure, the Jets have played some weaker teams.
Yeah, about that at the 10:15 hour.
Yeah, but, you know, I kind of take exception to that a little bit because, yes, Philadelphia is a mess right now. I mean, they're a mess. They're not playing good hockey. But I wouldn't say that the Edmonton Oilers are a weak team. I mean, the Oilers are in a playoff spot. They won again last night, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are doing Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl type of things. So, and the Oilers took the Jets to overtime. So, yes, Chicago is a weak team. Chicago's a bottom feeder. Philadelphia is, it's hard to believe because I picked Philly as a playoff team.
Did you really?
Well, they made the playoffs last year.
I know, I'm just teasing.
I thought they'd be better.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I also picked Edmonton to win the cup. This is the time of the show where I remind everyone that I picked the Oilers to win the cup last year.
Yes.
Usually half your picks are bad. The other half, though, are good.
Well, when you're right 51% of the time, it means you're wrong 49% of the time.
I would say more than half of my picks are bad, Dave. But, yeah, I mean, the Jets are, I mean, Tim Hebert, Jets stats man, tweeted it out. I mean, the Jets are 14-3-1. In their last 18 games, and they're averaging 4 goals a game.
Hard to beat that.
I mean, the only team that is hotter than them right now is Tampa. Sure. So it's the two hottest teams in the league, the top two teams in the league. You're right. It is going to be one of the most highly anticipated regular season games, and if any of the previous games are any indication, this should be a great one tomorrow.
The Jets have also shown a remarkable ability to come back after giving up the game's opening goal. I mean, oftentimes, you know, that's a pretty good indicator the team's going to win the game. Not always, obviously, but it usually helps if you open the scoring, you're not chasing. And the Jets this season, when giving up the first goal, are 10-4-0. That's pretty impressive. I mean, that's the one thing, and as he's talked about this one thing about this Jets team, you never count them out of games. You know, we saw that in the Rangers game, but we've seen that throughout the last couple of seasons. This is a team that really is never out of hockey games. And even if they're down, you always kind of expect them to get that tying goal and then send it to extra time, and then they have just as good a chance as any team to win. So, I think that the Jets and Lightning game tomorrow is going to be just a phenomenal game.
Yeah, sorry, Dave, I was just going to say, the Jets are 12-4-1. Let me get the math right here. 12-4-1 in the last 17, averaging 4.18 goals per game. That was the stat that Tim Hebert tweeted out. But regardless, I mean, you're talking about, you know, points in 13 of 17 games.
Yeah, it's a sign of a very good team. I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, there's only so many ways we can talk about it and only so many ways we can say the same thing. The Jets season, truthfully, doesn't begin until the playoffs begin. I mean, there's no question. Barring the biggest collapse, you know, that you can imagine, more or less.
Mark my words, the Jets and Predators are going to play in the second round.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine a situation in which they don't.
The only thing, Drew, that they have to do is that good habits have to be formed now. Right. I don't disagree with you that this is a team that already is thinking playoffs, but at the same time, there's so much important fundamentals of the game,
and I think their habits are improving. I mean, if you look at the last two games, take the game against Edmonton and the game against Chicago. Mm-hmm. So you enter the third period against Edmonton and you're losing, you're trailing in that game. Well, that third period they dominated the absolutely dominated the Oilers. Yep. I mean, what were the shots, 19-2 or something,
17-2,
whatever it was.
What about the shot attempts? Weren't they like something like 47-5 or something?
Yeah,
like that?
It was ridiculous.
It was in the 40s-5.
And then last night against Chicago, you're on the second half of back to back. You have the lead entering the third period. Well, the Jets, for the most part of that third period, dominated their opposition. Sure, the Blackhawks are able to tie it with that shot from the point with 7 seconds to go. But what happens? The Jets just decide to win the game in overtime. The poor play that, albeit, was getting them points earlier in the year seems to have fallen to the wayside. They're now playing like they played last year. Their game resembles what they looked like last year. And they're getting the results accordingly. And that's probably a scary proposition for the Jets' opponents most nights. And it usually is going to lead to some success, some impressive regular season success. And who knows about the playoffs? Still too early to talk about that. But no reason to think that that success shouldn't carry over.
Drew, tomorrow is, you know, Tyson Holyfield, Riddick Bowe versus Evander Holyfield. You know, McGregor versus Mayweather, whatever. You
Mandel
know.
Versus Ginsburg.
Yeah, that happens on a boat in international waters, though, where there's just lawlessness is what happens when Ezzy and I face off against one another. When we come back, Joe Smith of TheAthletic.com is going to join us. We'll talk more about the Lightning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsburg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TheAthletic.com, he covers the Tampa Bay Lightning. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Joe Smith. Joe, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, Joe. How about yourself?
Great. We're going to get ready for my flight to Winnipeg.
So there you go.
I'm more excited.
What could be better than Winnipeg in December? The weather's actually yeah. unseasonably warm, Joe, so you got
it's
that
very
going
mild
for you.
Right now.
Yeah.
I think it's +3 Celsius, not Fahrenheit.
Yeah, so about, let's say, in around 35, 40 degrees for you.
I can take that.
Yeah.
Nice crisp air. That's great.
Yeah, so. It could be a lot worse, so you can be thankful for that. Joe, obviously, we brought you on to talk about the Lightning. They're in Winnipeg to play the Jets tomorrow evening, a 6 o'clock puck drop, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Earlier this week, the Lightning had a sort of a 1-versus-2 battle against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they handled the Leafs fairly easily by the 4-1 margin of victory. Tomorrow night's game could be another 1-versus-2 game. At the very least, it's going to be a battle of two top five teams in the NHL. Are the Lightning sort of using these games as a measuring stick? I mean, they know that they're the big dog. They know that they're running away right now as the best team in the NHL, according to the, you know, in the standings. Do you find that the team is getting a little bit more excited for these games and the game earlier this week against the Leafs, or are they just taking it as one of 82 on the schedule?
I mean, I know it's one of 82, and that's what they'll say, but I think it is a very key evaluation period for them. As good as the start as they've had with all the injuries, you know, I think playing the Leafs was an eye-opener for them. As much as their score was 4-1, I think the Leafs had control a lot of that game. I think they outshot them 49-26, something like that. And they really played a lot of the game in the Lightning's end. So Vasilevskiy had one of the best performances I've ever seen from a goaltender, which is why they won that game. But it was still a good feeling out process for them with the team they'll probably play in the playoffs. And with Winnipeg, you know, they know this is going to be a huge test because, you know, the teams out west, they don't play very often, and Winnipeg will probably be there near the end too. So I think this past week they played that homestand. They played Boston, they played Colorado, and then they played Toronto, and now against Winnipeg in the West. Western Canada swing is going to be a really good measuring stick, I think, for them. Even though the record is the way it is, they're not playing to be leading the league in December. They're playing to be holding the cup at the end in June, and this is what these matchups really help them out with.
Joe, if I said that Nikita Kucherov, Braden Point, Tyler Johnson, if I said that those three guys were clicking offensively, would that be the biggest understatement of the year?
Well, yeah, I think especially Kucherov and Point together. I mean, those three been tremendous. You know, it's like they make magic together a bit. They're just so in sync and reminded me of the Stamkos and Kucherov like interplay last year when they were such a hot duo. But Kucherov and Point have really kind of, you know, found each other on the power play and in their own end. And Tyler Johnson can't be a forgotten part of that line, too. He's really having a good season, too. And he makes that line click by just doing all the little things and using his speed on the wing and kind of really find an open area. So that's been their best line and been their shutdown line too against other teams' top lines. So it's been a good mix for them.
You know, Joe, with the Lightning and Leafs battling, of course you have to think what would have been if the Tampa Bay Lightning would have been able to sign John Tavares. What might have been, and how close were they to getting that done?
Well, I mean, they gave it their best shot, and if they're one of five teams that got to meet with him in L.A. over the summer, so that told you they were at least in consideration. And I did a story for The Athletic this week just on that process and behind the scenes of what they were trying to do to get him. And I think it was the Leafs, you know, to win all along. The Leafs or the Islanders would be the where he would have went. But he was really impressed with the meetings with Cooper and Julian Breezeball and Steve Yzerman, with the culture the Lightning created, the system where they find guys and keep them under the cap just to keep this team going. And obviously the city and the organization is great to be part of. So he said that he really closely considered them, and they were up there near the end. But I think all along, as long as the Leafs did, you know, did what they thought they would do as far as their presentation and really found a good home for him, I think he found the right fit for himself.
Well, Joe Smith is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joe covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for TheAthletic.com. The Jets and the Lightning tomorrow evening here in Winnipeg. Puck drop 6 p.m. You can hear the game live on TSN Radio 1290. Joe, Mikhail Sergachev is into his second full season in the NHL, still looking for his first goal on the year. He's got 11 assists so far. How would you evaluate his second season so far on the Lightning blue line?
I think it's been solid overall. I mean, I know the points, the goals aren't there, which is frustrating for him because he considers himself an offensive kind of defenseman, but he's been playing better in his own end, which is an important part. They wanted to really make him take a step this year as far as, you know, in one-on-one battles and making the good decisions, you know, in your own zone. And him and Coburn have played, I think, pretty solid hockey together. So I think the points aren't there, but this kid's 20 years old. Let's not forget that. And it's going to take a while for him to develop into the high-ceiling kind of defenseman that I think everybody thinks he's going to be. But as far as handling the puck and playing against a little bit tougher matchups and growing into his own as far as that part of that ice, I think that's the main thing they want to focus on this year for him. And I think the goals are going to come. He's had many chances. He had a couple posts. So those goals will come eventually.
You know, Joe, you oftentimes hear about the sophomore slump, but when it comes to Anthony Cirelli, you might have to say that it's a sophomore bump. He's up to 9 goals in 33 games, a third-round pick back in 2015. He's centering that third line. What have you seen different in his game as compared to last year?
I think it's a growing confidence. He added some weight over the summer from sparse and strength goes. That'll help him in those kind of one-on-one battles and help him in puck protection and that like. But he's been absolutely tremendous for this team this year. And I know, last game they were matching him up sometimes with Austin Matthews light against Toronto. He has a lot of trust in the coaching staff defensively. He has this relentless work ethic where he can, find ways to create offense out of it, the way they play defensively. So, I know it's kind of a sophomore year. He came up at the end of March last year as his first call-up, so he's kind of still a rookie in that particular sense. But him and Matthew Joseph have been a big reason why the Lightning are where they are right now.
Joe, I know it happened 10 days ago or so, but I have to ask you about Eddie Pasquale, a guy who was in the Jets Moose organization, or Ice Caps, I should say, organization, drafted by the Atlanta Thrashers. Got his first taste of the NHL, won his first game, gave up 5 goals. But how nice a story was that for him to get into the NHL and play for the Lightning?
Oh, it's a wonderful story. One of those stories as a writer you love to tell after a crazy game like that. And I know he was upset he gave up 5 goals, but come up with a shootout win and some big saves at big times. So such an awesome experience for him. His whole family, I got to meet them after the game. They were in town. His parents, his fiance, brother and sister and cousin made the trip from Toronto where he's from. It's just, he thought about all the journey to get there, like the 10 years in the minors, 250 starts, all the AHL, EHL, just to get there and finally live his dream. It didn't last very long. He's back down in AHL now, but I think he'll always remember that night for the rest of his life, I think. And I think a lot of us who were around will remember that too.
Joe Smith is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joe covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for TheAthletic.com. The Lightning, of course, in Winnipeg tomorrow evening to play the Jets. Joe, if you had to pick one of Stamkos, Braden Point, and Nikita Kucherov to start a team with, who are you picking?
Good God, this is a tough question. I think Braden Point's been their best player for a good part of the season. I think it's hard to replace Kucherov's 100 points. I think Stamkos has an elite-level shot, but as far as the guy up the middle, which you like to build a team around, and the way he plays both ends of the ice, I think it'd be hard. I mean, it's a very difficult decision. It's like picking between two of your daughters, I guess, but it's I think that Braden Point would be the best player right now, I think, to build around.
Sticking Joe with tomorrow's game, obviously, and it's going to feature two excellent goaltenders, Connor Hellebuck and Andre Vasilevsky, and there's no shortage of offensive weapons, two of the top offensive teams in the league. Mike Kelly at The Point Hockey, he keeps track of slot pass completions, and Blake Wheeler is third in the NHL with 100. Nikita Kucherov is second with 106. Johnny Gaudreau's number one with 111. But do you think Nikita Kucherov gets talked about enough as one of the best playmakers in the entire game?
He should. He's such an elite-level hockey mind, and he's such great with his deception and the way he's thinking ahead of the play, where you've seen a million times this year, which is why Braden Point, I guess, has 22 goals this season, is because Kucherov found him. So he's really a student of the game. He studies film after every game. He figures out other team's tendencies, and he's such a creative playmaker. And I think people will probably recognize that who watch him play on a daily basis, but there's no question, as far as a scorer, he's one of the best in the league, but he's also a creative playmaker, which is, I think, Steven Stamkos is becoming that too the last couple of years, too.
Joe Smith, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the Lightning in town tomorrow to play the Jets. Joe, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us to talk about the Lightning.
No problem. We'll see you guys tomorrow night.
See you at the rink tomorrow, Joe. Thanks again. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Lightning, more on the Jets in general. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN Radio 1290. Tomorrow night, the Jets and the Lightning. I'm excited for this game tomorrow night. It'll be a doozy between the Jets and the Lightning.
I'm also very, very excited.
Wow. And I think everybody in the press box is very, very excited to have you return to the press box after having been out of town and away from the arena for the last, 10 days or so you've been gone?
It's been very lonely for me.
Oh, Dave. Nobody around to...
Well, no, I've had people around.
Oh, okay.
We had a 1290 intern.
Yeah.
Cassidy.
There you go. Cassidy is also known as New Ezzy.
No, wrong side. He was on the right side.
Oh, okay. He's New Drew?
No, Drew's on the far left.
Oh, okay. Sorry. It's hard to keep track of everything.
Drew, you're definitely far left.
Far left, I know. Welcome back. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So as I was saying, excited for tomorrow night's Jets Lightning game. You know, the Jets have been feasting on bottom of the league competition so far this year. You know, people are trying to use
them. Well, isn't everybody bottom of the league competition to the Jets when you're a top team?
Most of the teams, yes.
Doesn't that automatically, by default, make you a bottom of the league team?
It does, with the Jets being up at the top of the league. But we have not seen a ton of quality opponents in the building this year.
How many quality opponents are there in the NHL these days? 10?
Tampa, Nashville, Colorado, the one game that we saw them in Winnipeg, it wasn't.
No, but
very
I'm
good.
Not saying like, but I'm saying like overall in the NHL, how many teams are actually like really good?
Maybe half a dozen.
Right.
So I would say
10. Maybe.
I mean, for me, it's probably 4 or 5.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's the Jets, it's the Predators,
yeah.
It's the Lightning, the Leafs. I would put Washington in there as well. I don't think enough.
So Ovechkin's going to score 800 goals this year.
Well, I don't think enough people are talking about Washington, and I realize that, you know, they're a few points back of you know, the Leafs and the Lightning, but yeah, they're not that far back.
No, I mean, they're 19-9-3. They're 5 points up in the Metropolitan Division for top spot there. So they certainly
and as long
are,
as you're the reigning cup champions and you've got the best goal scorer in the league, I'm going to consider you an elite team.
I agree. I got no argument at all.
So there's
with
five
that
to me. There's five elite teams,
yeah,
and there's probably, you know, 20 to 22 mediocre teams, and then there's 4 or 5 really bad teams. I would put Chicago as one of those really bad teams.
I would actually divide it up. I'd say there's 5 elite teams. I would say there's, you know, 3 to 5, I'm going to say, above average teams. Then there's the whole mushy middle of mediocre, and then there's the really bad teams.
Right. So my point is that to round it out is the fact that there are a lot of bad teams, so the mm-hmm. Jets are in that upper echelon. And so when you say the Jets' schedule, well, I mean, the reality is that most teams aren't very good.
Yeah, it's absolutely the case. But tomorrow night, they're going to play a very good team. And it'll be very, I think it's going to be an interesting battle. I think the Jets themselves are going to get excited to play. You're excited to play against really quality competition.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, the Jets know that just on talent alone, they should be beating a lot of these teams that they've been successful in beating. I mean, that they may not have to bring their A game. Tomorrow night against the Tampa Bay Lightning, if you expect to beat them, you have to bring your A game.
The Lightning are averaging 4 goals a game. That's their average.
Yeah. And the Jets, to your point, what you were saying about before, in the last 17 games or so, are averaging about 4 goals a game.
Yeah, but the Lightning are averaging 4 based on 33 games.
Right, yeah.
Right. And so what I'm saying, I mean, is, you know, the Jets are one of the best offensive teams in the league, but that's 0.4 mm-hmm. more goals a game. So
it's a fascinating game tomorrow.
There's no edge. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, the Jets have the best power play in the league. Well, Tampa Bay is second.
I think it's third. But whatever it is, you're
according to NHL.com, they're second. But
okay, maybe it changed overnight because in preparing for the show, I had it at third. Whatever it might be, it's not important. But
29.3 ahead of Colorado.
Okay, there you go.
Come on, Drew.
Then did the Avs play last night?
The Avs, I
thought the Avs played last night. If the Avs played last night,
if only we had an online source to check that type of.
Well, if NHL.com worked, then we'd be able to do this.
But the Avs lost to the Blues last night. The Avs were second on power play entering the game.
Well, if you didn't go to bed at 9 o'clock, you'd be able to do these things.
Yes, but I'm an old man and I have to go to bed that early. So please do not criticize me for my bedtime habits. In any event, you're right. It's strength against strength tomorrow. It's two of the best goaltenders in the game doing battle against each other tomorrow, we presume. And I think everybody in this room would be shocked if it's anyone other than Hellebuck and Vasilevsky. They were both Vezina Trophy finalists last year. The games the Jets and the Lightning played last year, if you remember that game in Tampa, that was actually the better of the two games. That was the one where Braden Point scored for the Lightning and won it in overtime. I think it was a Saturday night, if I recall correctly. The Jets won in Winnipeg right after the All-Star break. I mentioned earlier in the show when Hutchinson got the win against Louis Domingue right after the All-Star game. Right after the All-Star game. So there was a bit of an asterisk on that game. But tomorrow night, you have two teams. The Lightning haven't played since Thursday against the Leafs. The Jets obviously played last night. They have the day off today, so they will be rested ahead of tomorrow night's game. Strength against strength. Best on best.
Yeah, and, you know, they haven't faced a goaltender like this in a long time. And obviously, you know, Jake Allen shut the Jets out last week at home. Yeah. But Another stat that Mike Kelly at The Point Hockey, Mike Kelly, good friend of the show, and he does a great job at The Point Hockey, if you haven't checked it out, actual versus expected goals against, Andre Vasilevsky is number one. Lauren Brossoit is number three.
Lauren Brossoit has been, I mean, for $650,000, even if the Jets were paying him $1.5 million, doesn't matter. He's been more than worth the investment for the Winnipeg Jets, and he looks comfortable in the Jets' net, and he looks confident, and I think especially when you're a goaltender, confidence counts for so much. Because we saw, what was it, about 2 weeks ago when Connor Hellebuck was letting in some softies. And he didn't, especially on that, it was sort of that right before that road trip out to New York, mm-hmm. where he didn't look like a confident goaltender. Now he looks like a confident goaltender again. And confidence is so important for a professional athlete. We talked about it with Tyler Myers earlier in the show. Tomorrow against the Jets, I mean, pick your poison, I guess, in some regards. But Trouba and Morrissey, do they get the point line or do they get the Stamkos line in your mind, Desi?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I'm sure that Paul Maurice and the coaching staff is thinking about that right now. And, you know, with the exception of maybe the Lightning and the Leafs, does any team have better forward depth than the Jets, right? Like, when you're talking about Point, Johnson, and Kucherov, that's a first line
mm-hmm.
for most teams. And then obviously Palat, Stamkos, and Yanni Gourde is your top line.
Yeah.
I love that third line, Anthony Cirelli between JT Miller and Alex Killorn. And then you've got Cedric Paquette centering that fourth line. Matthew Joseph has actually been a revelation there in his rookie year.
Mm-hmm.
You got Ryan Callahan, former captain of the Rangers, on your fourth line. I mean, if you've got Paquette, Callahan, and Joseph, that's an excellent fourth line. I mean, both of these teams are so deep at forward, on defense, and in goal.
Yeah.
We talked about it. Both teams have very good special teams, not just a good power play. Both penalty kill is very strong for the Lightning and the Jets. They both score a lot of goals, 3.5 to 4 goals a game. The Jets are averaging, over the last 17 games, we talked about it, over 4 goals a game.
Mm-hmm.
But try to find some type of equalizer or maybe something that separates these two teams or gives one team an advantage. I don't know if you're going to find that. I mean, maybe you give a little bit of an advantage to the Lightning's forward group, maybe?
I would. I mean, you have.
I don't think there's a big difference there, though.
I don't think it's significant. I mean, your top, you know, your top six versus your top six. It's, you know, flip a coin. I would say I like the Lightning depth a little bit better. They have their fourth line, which you just mentioned. Those guys are getting around 12 minutes a game. We know that, you know, Roslovic and Appleton and Lemieux, they're not getting anywhere near that amount. They're getting 7 minutes, maybe 7.5, maybe 8 if they're getting a lot of ice time. So John Cooper is able to put his fourth line out there in a more regular situation, and that'll be an interesting sort of battle to me tomorrow, in that you have guys on your fourth line for the Lightning, guys who are veterans. You know, Callahan and Paquette have been around this game for a long time. Matthew Joseph, obviously, is still new to the NHL. When you have, from the Jets' perspective, Roslovic and Appleton and Lemieux, who are new guys, who are all rookies, who are learning how to play in this kind of game, where I wonder how much of an impact, and I wouldn't be surprised if Callahan sort of sees that as an advantage and is able to use some of his veteran guile to maybe show the youngins on the Jets a little bit about what it's like to be a veteran in the league.
Right, and Dave, it's going to be a speed game. I mean, the Lightning are one of the fastest teams mm-hmm. in the league, and you know, nobody has more chances off of the rush. They're number one in rush chances. They average 5.2 rush chances a game.
Can't turn the puck over in this game.
Well, and you don't want to turn the puck over against any team, Drew, but I mean, this team has so much high-end skill. I mean, mm-hmm. we just went over all the names. I mean, pick your poison. I mean, Andre Palat, Steven Stamkos, Yanni Gourde, Tyler Johnson, Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov. I would expect Morrissey and Trouba to probably match up against the point line. We'll see what happens. I mean, you might see Sherratt and Buff a little bit up against that line. And it's a game in which, you know, it could come down to one power play. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a one-goal game or it goes to overtime or the shootout. And even though this game isn't going to mean much in the grand scheme of things, because both of these teams are going to the playoffs, both of these teams could end up winning their division, I think it is a very important game as far as measuring yourself now up against the big dog. I mean, the Lightning are the big dog. And I think, you know, you mentioned John Cooper. He's the longest tenured head coach in the NHL right now. I mean, the Lightning, obviously, you know, were bounced by the Washington Capitals last year.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing but the Stanley Cup is going to do for this team. I mean, this team has been built by Steve Yzerman and Julien Brisebois to win the Stanley Cup this year.
You know, the one thing I was saying, Drew, to your point, is the valuable experience that guys like Mason Appleton and Jack Roslovic and Brendan Lemieux will gain playing against these guys. Now, whether their minutes are going to get high, we'll see. But the fact is that you really do, as a young player, coming into a game like this, you're going to watch how everybody gets ramped up. And again, not that these guys are inexperienced, but at the NHL level, mm-hmm. to get that sort of opportunity to go up against a Tampa team, and you could be relied upon in some key situations, I think it's going to really serve these guys well.
You're right. I mean, some games are a grind to play against. It's hard to get up for certain games. I'm sure it was hard for the Jets to get especially excited to play that game last night against the Blackhawks. You played the night before against the Oilers. You won. You got to get on a plane. You got to travel to Chicago. You're playing against a team that really isn't going anywhere. They're not a very good team. You have to sort of dig deep to find the will to win that game last night. Tomorrow night is not a game where it's going to be difficult for you to get up for, just like those Leafs games earlier in the year. Those aren't games that are difficult to find the motivation to play. That's why you're a professional athlete, to play in contests like this where you get to evaluate yourself and get to test yourself, and you get to battle against a team that you think is as good as you are, or as good as any other team in the NHL.
And of course, those are going to be the questions asked to the players tomorrow at morning skate, 9:30 a.m. Is that, what do you feel that this is a measuring stick game? And all the players, including Blake Wheeler, I suspect, will try and quash that talk because they want to, you know, temper expectations. But I think, regardless of what they tell us, you know that they have to have this game circled on the calendar as a big test for the Jets and what their playoff aspirations will be later this season.
You know, Dave, an interesting matchup as well is, you know, a couple nights ago we saw the Lowry line go up against the McDavid line. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be curious to see if Paul Maurice tries to get the Lowry line up against the Point Kucherov-Johnson line. And then you'd probably see the Scheifele line versus the Stamkos line. That's a very important matchup. Because that Lowry line, Lowry, Tanev, and Perreault, I thought they did an excellent job for the majority of the game against the Oilers. And I thought they were really good yesterday. But a couple nights ago against the Oilers, that might have been their best game as a line.
Well, they were, you know, it's like Connor McDavid had a shadow on him the entire game.
Right.
I mean, and that's what you have to do against the best players in the league. You can't give them any time and space because they take... I mean, even though, you know, McDavid got his points and that line had success against the Jets on Thursday night, it's almost impossible to shut them down completely. But you need to make them work for their chances and work to get to the scoring areas. And I'm sure that's what Paul Maurice is telling that line as well. You need to make these guys work for every inch on the ice.
Well, and he made that switch. Murat Ateş asked him about the... about that after the game and said, you know, was there a reason why you went to the Lowry line? And Paul Maurice was rather coy and didn't want to explain why he shifted Lowry onto to covering McDavid from the Scheifele line that he started with. But you clearly see that he has a lot of confidence in those guys shutting down the big dogs.
And such a honor to some degree for Adam Lowry to be given that assignment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I trust you to go take on the best player in the game and to do what needs to be done for our team to end up successful. Ultimately, the Jets were in overtime against the Oilers and then in overtime last night against the Blackhawks. We'll see what happens tomorrow night, the Jets and the Lightning, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290.
You know, Drew, we should mention that even though, you know, the Lowry line did a great job against the McDavid line, McDavid rang iron before Morrissey got his overtime goal. So McDavid almost won that game for the Oilers in overtime. So
three-on-three is a whole separate kettle of gefilte.
Yeah.
When we come back, Craig Button is going to join us. He's TSN's director of scouting. He came out with his latest Craigslist. And we'll also talk about the upcoming World Junior Hockey Championship. Craig Button up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.